compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, hello there. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and thank you for listening. As ever, the number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you're new to the show, maybe you're just starting to listen. We hear from people all the time saying, I just landed on this station by accident. I didn't even know you were here, and now I can't stop listening. We'd love to hear that. So if that describes you and you're thinking to yourself, what kind of a show is this? It's on a Catholic network, but it's definitely not churchy. Well, that's good. If that's how you feel about the show, I'm glad about that. We cover a lot of territory. We get into a lot of different topics. Some of them are God topics, certainly, but we don't have guests on this program. I don't do interviews on this program. I'm here to talk to you. So the easiest way to facilitate that, if you're interested in a conversation with me, is just give me a call, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I want to bring to your attention a story broke the last couple of days about North Face, which is the clothing company. And as you know, they have extensive like sportswear items and things. And they did a little bit of virtue signaling, because they decided and they announced that they wouldn't do any business with oil and gas companies, fossil fuel companies, because according to their tweet, it's not consistent with our brand standards. Well, that kind of boomeranged back. It looks to me like virtue signaling, and all the more so after the CEO of Liberty, which is a fossil fuel company, an oil and gas company, he posted this video in which he responded to North Face's decision to target oil and gas companies by refusing to affiliate themselves with them in the form of not letting them put their custom logos on North Face apparel. And you're saying, well, why would that? Well, here's what the CEO of Liberty had to say in response to this.
I'm Chris Wright, CEO of Liberty Energy. North Face recently came out against my industry, even refusing to let one of my competitors put their company logo on a North Face jacket. I went through North Face's website of wide-ranging products, and I failed to find a single product that wasn't made out of oil and gas. The great majority of North Face's products, jackets, backpacks, outdoor pants, shirts, shoes, hats, etc., are dominantly made out of the oil and gas that we so proudly produce. Globally, 60% of all clothing fibers are made out of oil and gas. For North Face, it is likely 90% or more. So North Face is not only an extraordinary customer of the oil and gas industry, they are also a partner with the oil and gas industry. So thank you, North Face, and you're welcome.
Zippity-doo-dah. Yeah, that, I'm sure that caused some red faces around the corporate executive meeting table when that was released. I must admit, though, Cyrus, and this is just my ignorance of the oil and gas industry, I guess. Do you own any clothing that's made from gas? Like, are you wearing some?
You know, I wouldn't think so, but I'd be surprised.
Maybe it's the invisible hat you're wearing or something that's made of gas. I just honestly have never heard of anything.
Everything is made out of petroleum and oil. Everything.
Except for this show. The show is petroleum-free.
I hope so. But all of the equipment I'm using to get the show out on the air, there's plastic. I'm looking at so much plastic right now.
People don't even realize how early you have to come in every morning to shovel coal into the into the furnace to get the steam engine going, to get the equipment running. It's a big procedure.
Yep, coal and oil. That's that's how we do the show.
I have a friend who actually is. He works. He's an engineer, so his field is science, and in particular, the science of coal and coal energy and creating electricity through coal plants. And of course, that's very much in the doghouse right now. And coal has been so regulated, practically out of existence, that it's not really feasible, according to my friend, anymore to build like a coal-fired electrical plant, because the belief is that it's so dirty. But He's explained to me in great detail the tremendous strides that have been made in just that one field in terms of making it as clean as a whistle. And things that used to be problematic in terms of pollution are no longer problematic, but it still has the stigma because coal, you know, people think black smoke and soot and things like that.
And coal mines.
Yeah, Coal Miner's Daughter, the movie. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. I never did, but I'm just doing free association with you right now. I don't know where that's going, but yeah, so coal has a bad name. And I think now, at least according to my friend, it's an undeserved bad name because it actually does such a good job. You know, the people who do work in that area of making sure that it's clean of mercury and other issues like that. They do a great job. That song lives on forever, doesn't it?
On this show.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of science, did you know this, Cyrus? Maybe you didn't. But if you go to California, anyone in California who's fully vaccinated for COVID-19 is now able to take off their face masks. In most situations, this is according to the LA Times, this long-teased change will take effect Tuesday of next week, the same date as California's planned full economic reopening. Well, and finally,
welcome to the rest of the country, California.
I had the same reaction to it. For the last couple of weeks, any place I've gone in public, so to the hardware store to buy a can of paint or to go to the grocery store, what have you, nobody's wearing masks, except, by the way, for the employees. The employees are continuing to wear masks.
I see the same thing. And the employees are wearing the masks around their chin.
A lot of them are.
Yeah.
And you know, I do still see... And I'm okay with it. I do still see a few people in the public who are still clinging to their masks. So it's not entirely changed.
You know where I see masks more than anywhere else?
Where's that?
Driving. So when I'm driving, I see people driving with masks on.
I've never understood that.
Got me. I've done it, and just because back in the heyday of the pandemic and you're wearing a mask everywhere, I forgot that it was on. And I'm driving, and I've been in the car for 5 minutes. I'm like, what am I wearing this for? And yeah. I'll rip it off.
A kind of grimace on your face.
Yes, like, get off me. Get away from here. But
well, I do see people driving by themselves in their cars with a mask on. I've never understood that. I must admit, though, in the depths of winter, when it was freezing cold outside, it actually felt good to wear a mask when I left the store because it kept my face warm.
That might be the greatest thing that came out of all of this is that I now know to wear a mask in the winter to keep my face warm. I never knew.
Well, in California, check it out. Californians who are 2 weeks removed from their last vaccine dose or longer will now be allowed to go mask-free in nearly all settings. Now, the exceptions are in transit hubs, so like airports, etc., aboard all public transportation. I guess those are the places where COVID-19 knows that it is effective, but in a restaurant or a library or a grocery store, COVID-19 has been trained now to, it can't do any harm to you in those settings.
Smartest virus ever.
It must be, because we have to wear masks in these other places, but in most of the other places, you don't. So K-12 schools, you do. Childcare facilities and other youth settings. Homeless shelters, emergency shelters, cooling centers, correctional facilities, and detention centers, you do have to wear the mask. Now, this is in California. Unvaccinated people, on the other hand, will still be required to mask up in public indoor settings. Including restaurants when not eating or drinking, retail stores, and movie theaters. I told you my story, Cyrus, about being on the airplane and having a beverage. And in the months prior, if you had a beverage, you could just take your mask off. And then when you were finished consuming the beverage, 15, 20 minutes later, you would put your mask back on. But I didn't know that the rule had changed. And so when I was on another flight, the flight attendant came over to me because that's what I was doing. And she said, sir, you have to put your mask on in between sips. And I looked at her like, come on, you got to be kidding me. She said, no, this is for real.
Oh, she wasn't playing.
No. And I don't know how she felt about it personally, but I said, you mean so I can lower the mask, take a sip, I've got to put the mask back up? She said, yes, exactly. And she said, they will actually cite you if you won't comply with this, even to the point of, she wasn't like singling me out. I was just asking her like, what's the new policy? And she said, if somebody won't even pull it up over his nose, that's something that we can take action on. If we've told them more than once and they won't do it, we can have them cited and they can be banned from flying on the airline.
Hey, anyway. And if you're asking questions like that to her, I bet they were watching you real close because you sound like a troublemaker.
And you know I'm not. You know I'm just a good old guy. But you know what I do? I have a system that I use, Cyrus, whether it's a male flight attendant or a female flight attendant, doesn't matter. I always try to have a little banter, a little conversation just to let them know, hey, I'm one of the friendlies. I'm a good guy. And that's really stood me in good stead over the years when the flight attendant realizes, okay, here's somebody who's not a jerk and he's, you know, friendly to talk or whatnot. It can open doors. And I've been the recipient of, I'm thinking about one time where the flight ended and the male flight attendant came over and he said, hey, you know, nice chatting with you. Thanks a lot. Here's a bottle of wine, you know, for when you get wherever you're going. Little things like that. So let's get back to California. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So the duty of determining, this is from the LA Times, the duty of determining who is vaccinated and who is not vaccinated will fall to individual business or venue owners. Operators can either allow customers to self-attest that they've been vaccinated, and nobody would ever lie about that, would they, Cyrus? It would never happen. And therefore, they can enter without wearing a mask, or they must implement some kind of vaccine verification system, or they can require everybody to wear a mask. We at the state level, this according to Mark Gailey, he is the California Health and Human Services Secretary. He says, we at the state level are giving all three options to private and independent operators to choose which is best suited for their community and their business. He said the state's guidance will make clear that no one, even someone who is fully vaccinated, can be prevented from willingly wearing a mask as a condition of entering a business or participating in an activity. Well, they may not be prevented from doing it, but we do know of some companies, some restaurants, for example, that are charging more money for somebody who's wearing a mask. That we've talked about that on the program. It's just, to me, it's confusing and difficult for a lot of people. And I'm pretty sure that when I've been out in public and I see virtually nobody wearing a mask, I have a hard time imagining that every single last one of them has been vaccinated. You know, so how do you tell? And if you go into a store and the store owner says to you, have you been vaccinated? Naturally, people who haven't been, but they still want to go in and buy their cantaloupe or, you know, their can of paint, they're going to be tempted to say, well, yes, I am. And then how do you prove it or not prove it? There's no way to really prove it that I know of. So we'll see. And what about the people who have gotten COVID and have the natural antibodies? I was talking to one physician. And he was, he's just a friend of mine. So we had a chance to talk once in the, you know, the last couple of months. And he said the medical literature that he's following on this, he said, is quite startling. He said of the who knows how many hundreds of millions of people around the world who have contracted COVID, and maybe it's over a billion now, I don't know. But he said what's amazing about this is that from what he can tell, maybe 50 people globally who have gotten COVID have gotten it again. And I said, did I understand you correctly? Did you say like 50 have gotten it again? He said, yes, because what it seems to be showing is that there is, you know, a great immunity if somebody has already had it because the antibodies are there. And we'll see what happens with those numbers. But that's another question. You know, what about all the people who have had it and now can't give it and can't get it? So that's another question. We'll find out more as time goes on. 888-914-9149. Let's talk to Sam in Athens, Georgia. Sam, it's nice to have you on board today. Welcome. How have you been?
Thank you. Been doing well, Patrick.
Good.
Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. So what's on your mind this morning?
I'm wondering in Matthew where Jesus says that you will go to hell for calling someone a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Do we take that literally?
I have pondered that that very thing many times. Because there are times when I have been tempted to say that to or about somebody. And that passage sticks in my mind because I think to myself, you know, this is Matthew 5:22. If I say that and Jesus does mean that literally, then that's a serious sin. So here's the passage for those who are not familiar with it. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother shall be liable to the council. And whoever says you fool shall be liable to the hell of fire. Now, what's interesting is there are plenty of times in Scripture when people are referred to as fools, but usually by God. It's typically like in Proverbs and other places. But even St. Paul refers to people, certain people, as fools. So that to me suggests that maybe our Lord did not mean that in a strictly literal sense, and that there may be some instances where it would not be sinful to say, you know, you fool, or don't be foolish or something. I don't think that he meant that any time you would say that, it would be a sin. Sometimes, perhaps. And I would liken it to in Matthew chapter 23, where Jesus says, call no one on earth Father. And yet we know that he didn't mean that literally, because throughout the New Testament, it's replete with many examples of the apostles, for example, and others referring to and even addressing in a religious sense men as fathers. St. Stephen, in the book of Acts, when he was about to be martyred by being stoned to death, he addresses the Sanhedrin, the Jewish leaders. He addresses them as my brothers and fathers, listen to me. So it was a formal term of address. So we can deduce from things like that that our Lord did not mean in a strictly literal sense, do not call anyone on earth father. He was referring to, don't look to the Pharisees and the scribes for a kind of fatherhood that they don't really possess. Only God is your father. So maybe in Matthew 5:22, where he talks about calling someone a fool, it may be something like that. That's my take on it, Matthew. Or I'm sorry, Matthew, Sam.
Thanks for
Well, there's your new nickname. Yeah, there's your new nickname. That's my take on it.
Well, thank you, Patrick.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, because of that verse over the years, since I really began to take notice of it, I have really sort of pulled back and tried to avoid calling somebody a fool, just in case. Just in case, you know, when I meet the Lord face to face for my exit interview, and he says, by the way, that passage, Matthew 5, I meant that literally. I mean, so I'm hedging my bets just in case he did mean that literally. I want to make sure that I have as clean a record as I can.
Me too.
All right. Well, look, did we get it?
Yes, sir. You hit the nail on the head, as
All
they
right.
say in the South.
Are you staying healthy? Healthy, wealthy, and wise?
I am. I had surgery about 3 weeks ago, and it was very successful, and everything is working well.
Good. I'm happy to hear it. Everyone's happy to hear it, Sam. Well, I'm going to take a break. It's a nice way to finish up this segment, talking to you. Automatic for the people. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. The number is 888-914-9149. We have lines open right now, 888-914-9149. We'll go to New Berlin, Wisconsin, and talk to Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I've been really took to listening to Relevant Radio in the last 6 months. So anyway, I was just listening to you guys on my way back from the Y this morning, and heard you talking about the plastics and the threads with North Face.
So yeah,
it's kind of funny. But I've worked in the energy industry for many years, and I didn't look up any information, but just a point of interest. Mm-hmm. Natural gas actually is a large component of feedstock into the chemical industry, which includes making plastic. So that probably is part of the feedstock that goes into a lot of your clothing.
Interesting. So to make the fibers that clothes are woven from, that kind of thing?
Right, because it's used in many different kinds of plastics, or some of the chemicals that they combine to make plastics, which makes mm-hmm. them a lot of the threads, because so much of our clothing now is synthetic. So, so it's a big feedstock component. I guess I'd have to go look up and see exactly what the whole stream is, but it's as important as oil in terms of plastics and chemical industry.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, it's amazing. It's like in the olden days, no part of the animal goes to waste. And this material that comes up out of the ground has millions of uses for it, I guess. And they can, you know, they can wring as much out of it as possible before it's, you know, no use to anybody. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you.
But I love your show, and I'm really enjoying Relevant Radio. So,
How did you hear about us? How did you find us?
Well, I heard about you from a guy I was talking to at the Y, and he was talking about listening one day, and then I started to get tired of listening to the talk shows, and of course, I turned the news off a year and a half ago, so I have to go do my own research. But since I found you guys, I just listen more and more. Interesting anecdote, I went to a wedding up in Green Bay this past weekend, and the presider was Father Mike Brennan, and I said, hey, I heard you say in Mass yesterday. So I actually was at a Mass that he said on Saturday after hearing him on Friday.
So I bet he liked that.
He did.
Yeah. Well, you probably have had people tell you, Mike, that you have a good voice for radio, so keep that in your back pocket.
I have, but they've also told me I have a good voice for singing, and trust me, I can't sing a note.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Mike. Good talking to you. 888-914-9149. How about Eliza now in Tucumcari, New Mexico? One of my favorite town names.
Yeah, it's a cute little town. I'm passing through. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are doing well, thank you. Are you driving to some other place, or are you from Tucumcari?
No, I'm passing through. I'm a truck driver for now, and this just happened to be where I tuned in.
Gotcha. I've driven through Tucumcari. There's not a whole lot out there, except for Relevant Radio listeners. We've got a tower there, I'm happy to say.
That's cool, yeah. You guys come in nice and clear here.
Great.
So, two comments. I called in originally about the North Face thing, and you know, I agree with you guys on one end that I do think it is virtue signaling, because, but, you know, I think in the other direction, I don't think North Face does enough, and obviously a lot of natural gas and oil stuff is in their products, and for a company that, you know, claims to be so much about the outdoors, I mean, I grew up on the Gulf, and I was there when the big oil spill happened, and, my church, we did a lot of volunteer work, and it really broke my heart to see just the damage to God's beautiful creation. And you know, I mean, there's really nothing more visceral than having a tiny, beautiful little duckling in your hands covered in this horrible sludge, gasping for air, you know, and
you
watching,
talking about
Are
you talking about the British Petroleum spill from 12
years ago? Yeah, the BP spill a few years ago, yeah.
You notice how nobody talks about that anymore. I want to point something out. You notice it was the end of the world, and it was terrible. I remember there was a 24/7 cam that was aimed at that, where you could tune in at any time of the day or night and see the oil gushing out from this damaged rig. And it was the end of the world. It was the apocalypse, and everything was going to die. And once I think the political benefit of that spill, as bad as it was, had been used up, nobody ever talked about it anymore. And you never hear anybody, I mean, you are probably the first person I've heard bring that up in the last 10 years, honestly. And what does that tell us? The problem with that is
nobody cares about us here on the Gulf, because it's just poor folks, you know? And I think that's a big problem, but we still feel the effects down here. I mean, I don't live down here anymore, but, you know, I mean, there was people's livelihoods, but also, I mean, in the last 5 years, I've had, you know, so many people get all kinds of cancers and things that the doctors have never heard of that they're saying might be because of that spill, and pollutions that come up through, you know, the waterways and everything, because everybody's right on the Gulf and swimming in it, and, you know,
I don't think it would be fair to say, oh, let me play devil's advocate. I don't think it would be fair to say nobody cares about the people on the Gulf, because for one thing, let's face it, there are a lot of wealthy people who have homes and businesses along the Gulf Coast, from Texas through Florida. I mean, so, but to your point, I guess maybe the way I look at it is not so much that people don't care about poor people, but rather that for the political uses that oil spill brought. So what year was that? George W. Bush was still in office at that time, wasn't he? This was before President Obama was...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
That was before Obama, yeah.
It was used as a political weapon from the left against George W. Bush, no question about it. It was a stick to beat him with endlessly. And then when President Obama came into office, it basically went away. and you didn't hear anybody talking about it, and it was sort of the political usefulness was gone. I think it's more a function of that, Eliza, rather than people not caring about the citizens. But then again, I don't
agree
there,
with
so.
That. I think the problem is, and I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I'm a longtime socialist, and all my family's been union folks and and you know blue collar workers, and so I don't trust the so-called left that we have in this country any more than the right, and they don't have any more love for, you know, the downtrodden than the people they claim to be the enemies.
They talk
of.
A good game, don't they? They talk a good game.
Yeah, they do talk a good game, and you know, a good example of that is my daughter is transgender, and she you know, has a lot of real struggles in this world, in this country, and it frustrates me seeing our current president say, "Oh, I've got your back, I've got your back," and then the legislation does nothing for her and breaks my heart.
That's a whole topic
unto
itself.
They don't really have our interest in mind. Yeah, and it,
but,
it's
but you
hard.
Know what? Let me just jump in here. My take on this is that it's actually gone quite the other direction, and maybe you can offer me some insights. But the transgender ideology, the transgender movement, the transgender reality, whatever term we want to use to describe it, it's being catered to and celebrated and, in my view, forced upon the rest of the country, and legislation and special laws in favor of these groups has been very much going in their favor, not against them. So it really surprises me to hear you say what you're saying, because I think the average guy on the street would agree with me that this has gone far more in the direction of catering to people who are either transgender or they promote the transgender ideology. So what is it you're seeing that I'm missing? Because everywhere I turn, I see an emphasis on how important it is that we accept this and celebrate it. What am I missing?
Totally. I mean, here's the thing, is that it sounds that way. And if you look at the TV and if you listen to pundits on both sides, it really sounds like this sort of cultural war is shifting one way or the other. But I mean, the reality of my daughter's life is that, you know, in the state that we live in, she is too afraid to use a public restroom ever. She it's been 4 years since she started her transition, and I love my daughter.
How old is your child? Is your child genetically, anatomically a boy who has transitioned?
She transitioned from, you know, presenting and being read as a boy to how, and I know a lot of people don't have someone in their life to see this happen, but I had an unhappy child. I had an unhappy child who
how old?
Didn't feel God's love. And she is 26 now. She transitioned to 22. And I have a happy child now. And to me, I mean, I see God's love in the doctors who made that happen. And, you know, we live in a state where she's afraid to go out in public because she was living in Tennessee for a while, and Tennessee just passed a law that says any business that allows trans people to use the bathroom they present as. And people don't realize, people think that they'll know, but you would never know that my daughter is trans if you didn't know. You would never, never, ever, ever, ever know. She hasn't, nobody has, you know, read her as a boy in years. But in Tennessee, there's a state law that now says that any business that allows trans people to use the bathroom of their, you know, identified gender, the gender they present as, they have to put a sign, a big red, horrible sign saying that this business, you know, caters to trans people, and it's humiliating. It's okay. Humiliating, breaks my heart to see.
I can see what you're saying. I have to keep track of the time, Eliza. So let me jump in here. I can see what you're saying, and I don't discount you as a father wanting to see your child happy. I definitely don't discount that. I'm a dad too. You know, I want my kids to be happy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, what about though? The women and children who probably would never in a million years have any issue with your child, your son or your daughter. And I want you to understand, I don't accept the transgender ideology, so I don't buy into the rhetoric of calling a a biological male, a female. So please forgive me, but I won't go down that road with you. But for lack of a better term, what I would say is your own child notwithstanding, okay, how do you address the concerns of men and women, boys and girls, who would be very fearful if they saw a man and they would think this is a man? And I'm not talking about your child, but a man who's dressed up as a woman using the women's restroom. Women and,
well,
and girls, hang on, I'm not done. Women and girls have, especially if they're going to be in the bathroom, they want a sense of privacy that doesn't involve men being there. Now, whether the people who promote the transgender ideology understand it or not, it's a real fear, and it is well-placed because women and girls have been molested and raped and even killed in settings like that. And over the last several years, I've covered any number of stories in which men have tried to take advantage of these new laws and dress up as women and go into JCPenney's fitting rooms or in bathrooms or other places and have caused harm. So it is a real fear. And just the phenomenon of how men and women are as such, it is part of that. So how do you address their concerns? I hope you don't just dismiss them. How would you address those concerns, Eliza?
I think those concerns, I think it's a very real concern to want privacy in a bathroom. But I think the way we structure our society, I was just in California. In California, every single gas station is single stall, has no gender on the door, just says bathroom. You go in, there's a toilet, there's a sink, and you do your business, and you're done. There's nobody else in there. There's no...
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't need a lesson in gas station bathrooms. I'm saying, how do you address the concern of a, say me, for example, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a grandfather. I do not want a man dressed up as a woman in the women's bathroom where my wife is. I don't want that. She doesn't want that. I don't want my young adult daughters being in a situation. Whether or not the man who's dressed up as a woman thinks he's a woman, to me, is immaterial. He has no business being in there. So I'm in favor of helping people such as your child with, for example, what Target was doing for a while, where they just had, you know, single stall or single, what would you call them, single person bathrooms. That to me is a perfect way to go about this. But in places where that's not possible, I hope you can at least see why people, many people, have a real problem with this because of the potential dangers that it puts women and children in. I hope you see that.
I understand that people have concerns, and I understand that people have been attacked. And I personally, when I was a young girl, I was attacked in a women's bathroom by a man. And you know what? He wasn't dressed as a woman. He wasn't pretending to be a woman. It wasn't a costume.
Okay.
He came
All
into
right.
the women's restroom dressed as a man and attacked me. And that's
and
already
that's
illegal.
Horrible. And that's horrible.
That's
and I feel terrible that this happened to you.
Special
I
laws
really do.
That target people. We don't need special laws that target people who are already statistically more likely than people who aren't trans to be attacked or harassed in bathrooms.
Well,
and
we already have laws, as you said.
Eliza, we
already have laws, as you said, that punish people who do that kind of thing. But what if something slightly different had happened? What if, in order to gain access to the place that you were, he had dressed as a woman? What about that? Would that have been bad also?
It would have been equally illegal under the law that already existed. Equally illegal.
Okay, so help me out here. I thought we were talking about how the laws now are in favor of the transgender people, and we went through this with Target, for example. Target said we're going to have gender-free bathrooms, and these were the bathrooms that weren't the one-person type. Multiple stalls in a single bathroom, and there was a huge uproar. And so what I'm saying is, whether or not somebody in his own mind is saying, I identify as a woman, there are guys out there who are freaks who would go to that length to dress up as a woman so that they would have an opportunity to go into a place like that and potentially do harm. I mean, that's a reality. That's a real danger. And I think we need to guard against that, don't you?
I don't. I think the law already prohibits assaulting people in a bathroom. And if they don't assault me, why would I care?
No, okay. I'm not talking just about assault.
Genitals,
I'm not talking just
right,
about
but
assault.
What I'm
talking.
Is,
okay, let me just finish my thought, and then I promise you I'll give you your time. I'm not talking just about assault. That's bad enough. But if my wife or my daughter or my granddaughters are in the women's restroom, I don't want a man, whether he thinks he's a woman or not, I don't want him in there, even being there in their presence, period. What about that?
Why?
Because there is a potential threat.
If they don't know, like in the case of my daughter, no one would know that my daughter is trans unless they peer over the stall and see what she's doing in there.
Yeah, but see, you're using an extreme example to, I guess, try to make your point. It's not just somebody who's in the stall minding his or her own business. It's being there, being around where the other women are, being, you know, being inside this bathroom or the shower or the locker room or what have you, the changing rooms at JCPenney's. It goes far beyond merely somebody who's doing his own business in a bathroom stall, far beyond that.
But those things, like, you're talking about hypothetical predators, and I'm talking about my real child, you know?
We're talking about
my child.
Both.
Right, but one of those is a real person. One of those is a real person, and one of those is a tactic that's being used to hurt
not
people
so.
Like my daughter.
No, that's false. That's a false narrative, and I'm not using anything that's unreal. I'm talking about actual news-reported incidents where you have men who dressed as women and went into these places in public and they harassed or in some other way harmed women and children. Those are real things, real predators,
which is
real
people who
did that.
Illegal. It's already illegal to go and harass women or harass anyone in a bathroom, and that should be punished by the law. I agree
that
is a threat that everyone experiences. I don't think that has anything to do whatsoever with the trans community or people like my daughter.
It has everything to do with it, everything. And the fact that you don't see it troubles me, because if you were to take a poll of anybody on the street, any woman, any little girl, for example, would you want a man dressed as a woman in the bathroom or the changing room or the whatever where you are doing something intimate? Would you want him to be there? 99 times out of 100, you're going to get the no answer. That's just how it is. And
it is, but that fear is being used to hurt people that it doesn't have anything to do with.
No, that's not true. No, it's not fear.
It is true.
Nope, it's not true. It's not fear. It's common sense. It's reality.
It's not and common sense because
it is. All right, there's nowhere to go with this. I don't know what else to tell you, Eliza, but I do wish you well, and I'm out of time anyway. Thank you for the call. Interesting, to say nothing else. I appreciate it. I'll be right back. We deal in facts, not fear, here at Relevant Radio. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. I'll be right back.
Time to take it out there. Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
You know what they say? The Patrick Madrid Show is filled with unexpected and unusual, interesting conversations. That's something I can guarantee you if you listen to this program for any length of time. And I'd love to talk to you if you have a comment or question. My number is 888-914-9149. We'll be going back to the phones in just a moment. First, though, a story that ties in with the caller that we had just a few minutes ago. That was a lively call. This has to do with a Virginia elementary school physical education teacher by the name of Brian Tanner Cross. He goes by Tanner. He was suspended after he appeared at a Loudoun County school board meeting, and he voiced his views on students. I don't know if he's referring in general, but just the idea of transitioning from one gender or one sex to the other. And he was doing so in response to a 60-minute segment. So you hear a little bit about that. So we're going to tell you the story. Cyrus, we've got some audio. I think we have audio of Tanner Cross speaking at that meeting, right?
That's right. So Tanner, he was at the county school's board meeting. This was on May 25th, and he was very respectfully explaining his concern for students who struggle with gender dysphoria,
right,
and his concern being a Christian, being forced to teach.
Adopt the language.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And so we have his actual 60-second speech that got him in trouble. So
let's hear that.
Let's play
that. Okay, thank you.
My name is Tanner Cross, and I'm speaking out of love for those who suffer with gender dysphoria. 60 Minutes this past Sunday interviewed over 30 young people who transitioned, but they felt led astray because lack of pushback or how easy it was to make physical changes to their bodies in just 3 months. They are now detransitioning. It's not my intention to hurt anyone, but there are certain truths that we must face when ready. We condemn school policies like 8040 and 8035 because it will damage children, defile the holy image of God. I love all of my students, but I will never lie to them regardless of the consequences. I'm a teacher, but I serve God first, and I will not affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God.
Okay, so that was the commentary that got him in trouble. It got him fired. So a lawsuit was brought. He was being represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a religious liberty legal group. And the Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys were representing him in this lawsuit after he had been suspended for voicing his objections to two proposed school policies that you just heard him refer to. The policies would force teachers to violate their conscience as educators and their deeply held beliefs by requiring them to address students with their chosen pronouns rather than the ones consistent with their biological sex. The teacher, Tanner Ross, whom you just heard, attended Loudoun County's school board meeting. This was at the end of last month, and he respectfully explained his concerns for the students who are struggling with gender dysphoria. And 2 days after the meeting, the school informed him in a letter that he was being placed on administrative leave, quote, pending an investigation of allegations that he engaged in conduct that had a disruptive impact. You heard how disruptive he was right there, didn't you? A disruptive impact on the operations of Leesburg Elementary School. Alliance Defending Freedom attorneys sent a letter to the school district Friday explaining that placing Cross on leave and barring him from campus because of his constitutionally protected speech constituted illegal retaliation. ADF requested that the school reinstate Cross, rescind the suspension, and remove the letter from his file and refrain from any future retaliation against protected speech if the district wished to avoid legal action. The school responded by letter by doubling down on its unconstitutional actions and stating that it intends to stand by its decision to suspend Cross. In response, his attorneys filed suit against the school district and asked the court to immediately halt the enforcement of Cross's suspension. As the lawsuit Cross versus Loudoun County School Board filed in Loudoun County Circuit Court explains, the school board's actions violated the Virginia Constitution when it punished Cross by retaliating against him for expressing his beliefs in a public forum, and also violated his free speech and free exercise of religion by discriminating against his religious beliefs. What could be key in this case is that he didn't even violate a policy. He expressed an opposition to a proposed policy. It wasn't in place yet. They were discussing it. And he says, I can't go for that. And for that, he was shut down. Now, there's more to the story, right, Cyrus? There's some developments on this story that we should bring to the fore, including the fact that he was reinstated. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. And I have some audio. This is from late yesterday, and this will give us this will complete the picture.
Good. Thank you.
The church community at Cornerstone Chapel in Leesburg drawing a line Friday night.
The Loudoun County schools have clearly cross that line.
They are standing with Leesburg Elementary teacher Tanner Cross, who was placed on administrative leave after speaking out against a proposed gender policy.
Advocating for causes I believe in on my personal time should not cost me my job.
Cross's lawyers filed suit against the school district Tuesday, claiming the district's action violated his right to free speech and was retaliation for opposing the policy that would allow gender-expansive or transgender students to use their preferred gender pronouns and chosen name.
LCPS should not require me to violate my conscience and lie to my students, and I care too much for my students to lie to them.
Tanner says the policy goes against his religious beliefs.
Religion should play no role in the decision of how this teacher actually addresses his students.
An injunction hearing was held Friday to return Cross to work as soon as possible as the lawsuit moves forward.
Everyone's rights come under threat if a school board can strip teachers like Tanner of their fundamental rights as Americans, American citizens, and get away with it.
Nobody's challenging this teacher's beliefs. This is about respecting every individual's desire to be who they truly are.
The school district says they're continuing their investigation, and Friday told 7 News they would not comment on pending litigation.
Okay, and that's courtesy of, I believe it's, is it ABC? Yeah, courtesy of ABC News for that audio clip. And also the article I was sharing with you before that audio clip was by William A. Jacobson. And we'll get a link posted to that article so you can read it for yourself or share it if you'd like. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll just point out that as the attorney opposing Tanner Cross was saying, you heard this a moment ago, I believe it was the attorney, and he was saying this is not about religion or anything. It's just about everybody being free to be who they are. But you'll notice that that's one-sided. They're not allowing him to be who he is. So Tanner Cross expresses a view that's contrary to what they're trying to promote, and they immediately show themselves to be the most intolerant of people because they simply will not tolerate a different view from theirs. And it's all in the name of tolerance that they themselves are intolerant and anti-diversity when it comes to his particular opinion. So you can see the built-in incoherence of this kind of approach to the issue. Let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Eric first in San Diego. Good morning, Eric. Welcome.
Morning. I'm a straight white man, and I don't understand the homosexual community or the transgender community. And I believe that as a straight white man, I don't have the ability to understand them. And so this teacher, he doesn't know where they're coming from. He has no idea where they're coming from. He's never been in their shoes, never been in their situation. And he doesn't have, I mean, he can have his opinion, but he doesn't have any right to tell them what it's like because he doesn't know what it's like. He's never
okay.
been there
did
before.
Eric, did you hear him say that? Did you hear him say what you just said? No. I can tell,
no,
I can finish the question.
But he was,
mm-hmm.
he
Go
was
ahead.
Giving his opinion about something he didn't have an opinion about, but it wasn't about him. It was about other people. And why would he be stepping, why would he give an opinion about nothing he knows about? Why does he need to feel that he needs to do that?
Okay, I can explain it to you, Eric. I would think this should be self-evident because this proposed policy would require him to change his vocabulary. And it would require him to address people by pronouns that he recognizes scientifically, anatomically, genetically, etc., that to call somebody a woman or by female pronouns when it's really a man, he objects to that. And it's because it would force him to do something he didn't want to do. That's the whole reason that he stood up and said that.
I understand. And I believe he doesn't want to do this because he doesn't understand it. And when you don't understand something, you're scared of it. And he sounds more like he doesn't understand it because he has a belief about it already, which means that when you have a belief about something, it's hard to change your mind about it.
Yeah, see, that's another false narrative. So let's pick that apart. First of all, that's the fallacy of ad hominem. You're committing a logical fallacy here by you're imputing either ignorance or stupidity and fear to somebody simply because you disagree with them. So that could easily be turned back around on you, Eric. Just because you don't understand him, I guess that must mean you fear him. And because you fear it, you're opposing it out of fear and ignorance. And I don't believe that's true for you, but it's certainly not true for him either.
I do, though. It's easy to understand. And it's not a fallacy. That's an actual psychological thing. When you don't understand somebody, you have fear to it. That's where racism comes from. It comes from not understanding.
These are professional talking points, Eric. I recognize what you're doing, and I recognize where this is coming from.
I'm not that intelligent. I'm just telling you. It's very simple.
I think you're pretty intelligent. But no, let me just tell you that the fact that he was speaking out against a proposed, not law, but a proposed policy for the school, he has every right to do that. And for you to impute fear to him or to say that he's ignorant, he just doesn't understand it, that is a logical fallacy. That's part of the problem of what you're saying. People have a right to their own opinions. They have a right to express their own opinions. I mean, look at you and me right now. We're having a conversation. Okay, so he has that right. Would you agree with me on that? He has the right to do that?
100%. He has a right to his own opinions and beliefs.
Right, just as you do. Okay, so my view is let the strongest and best ideas prevail in the area of public discourse. Let's test them against each other and find out which ones are the right ones, rather than firing the guy just because he questioned this proposed rule. I think the school board was wrong. I think he was right.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. And it was a little harsh. It was definitely a little harsh on the school board to fire someone for their own beliefs. It should have been more of us talking to him about it and to be like, hey, here's what those guidelines are these days. It was definitely, that's an extreme, 100%. That was an extreme for Tom's beliefs. And he should have just been, you know, maybe you'd agree that nothing should have happened. I think maybe he should have just been talked to in the back office, saying you shouldn't be saying these things.
Why not? What did he say that was wrong? I mean, you may disagree with his outlook on this issue. Fair enough. Okay. But what did he do wrong? Why should he be given a talking to? Well, we're out of time. I apologize. But, you know, call me another time. I'd love to talk to you again. This is fascinating, and it's well worth discussing. Thank you. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. I'm coming right back right after this.